Okay, so last week we started talking about the topic of Elu Elu Divrei Elokim L'Chaim. Very briefly, we saw two basic positions thus far. The first position takes the phrase Divrei Elokim L'Chaim more literally. We saw this in the Chachmei Tzarfas quoted by the Ritva, as well as the Yerushalmi, presumably. Literally, these are the words of the living God, meaning say Hashem gave both options at Sinai and left it to the Chachamim Shebechol Dor Vador to be Machria, using their understanding of the Torah. In that sense, literally both views are equally true. There are multiple truths. And the question is, when we determine the halacha, we're not figuring out who's right, but what's the halacha? And the Torah says the halacha is nikba based off of the majority position. We saw others who disagree. It's inconceivable that both views are equally true. Obviously, there is a correct answer. It's either Tamei or Tara. Kadosh Baruch Hu had something in mind. They're incompatible. Can't be that it's both Tamei and Tara, presumably. And therefore, they had other ways to read Divrei Elokim Chayim, but it doesn't mean that they're both equally true. We turn now to the approach of the Ran in Drashos. The Ran talks about this in actually two places in Drashos quite extensively. And the Ran's approach is more towards the second. It would fall into the second school of thought in the sense that Divrei Elokim Chayim doesn't mean literally they're equally true. No, there's one that's more true than the other. But he teaches us something very interesting in terms of how he addresses the question of halachic determination and an issue that we also brought up a bit last time, which is, do you have to be concerned that they're making a mistake? So let's take a look together. So again, we're using the same sheets as last week's, and it's on the left column of page 1. We have the Gemara Batanor Shel Achnai, the very famous Gemara in which Rebbe Lazar held a certain position. He was in a minority. We've talked about this Gemara earlier. He was outvoted, and we follow the Chachamim, even though Rebbe Lazar had these miracles and even a baskol saying that he was correct. So let's take a look at the Drosh Aran. The first one we're going to see is from Drosh Shvi'i and then from Drosh Chamishi. So one question is whether the miracles in this story of Tanur Shel Achnai proved that Rebbe Lazar was correct. Or no, maybe they were done lechvodol Rebbe Lazar, but they don't necessarily demonstrate that he's correct. And obviously, if you assume that they do demonstrate it, he was correct, then how are you supposed to be comfortable doing what seems to be incorrect? So the Ran takes the view that the Bas Kol and the miracles do indicate that Rebbe Lazar was correct. He had arrived at the true position. But nevertheless, Kadosh Baruch Hu doesn't want us to follow that. Kadosh Baruch Hu demands of us that the Torah be determined independently, and meaning to say using human reasoning, and that the majority position be followed. Now, it might usually be the case that the majority is more likely to come up with the correct interpretation, but the Torah says they should be followed regardless. So let's take a look over here in the Ran. Shemeachar shehachras haTorah nimsera lahem b'chayehem. The hachra of the Torah was given over to the Chachamim. The Torah says that the Chachamim are the ones that are supposed to interpret the Torah. The Sichlam Hayim Chayev Latame, and their intellect stated that this is Tame. Hayim in Arosh Yatame Afal Pishu Hefach Menemes. So the correct thing to do was to be metame, even though it's hefach min ha'emes. We don't want to call it sheker, but it's hefach min ha'emes. And that's because for them to change their position, to recant, due to the miracles, due to the baskol, would be to violate the Torah's rules. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we can't outsmart HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We can't outsmart HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's what's meant when the Gemara says later, Nitzchu Nivanai. Hashem said they defeated me, but it doesn't just say he defeated me. If you look back at the Gemara, at the last line of the Gemara, which is in the source above, it says, HaKadosh Baruch Hu smiled, and he said, Amalei, Kachayach v'amar Nitzchu Nivanai, Nitzchu Nivanai. As HaKadosh Baruch Hu felt that Klal Yisrael, the Chachamim, were doing the right thing by following the rules that he had outlined for them in the Torah. You can't outsmart HaKadosh Baruch Hu. HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us the Torah, and he told us to follow it. And we're meant to follow it. And not to outsmart it. It's in a sense reminiscent of another idea that we find in the Torah, which comes up in numerous places, the mistake of Chizkiyahu not to have children. He didn't want to have children. There's a mitzvah peruvu. He said, look, I know what Menashe is going to do. How could I do it? And Yeshayahu chastises him and says, no, that's the wrong thing. You can't outsmart HaKadosh Baruch Hu. HaKadosh Baruch Hu said there's a mitzvah to have children. You should have children. And the fact that you know through prophecy what they're going to do is irrelevant. The Nefesh HaChaim explains that the Avos kept the Torah, but because there was no obligation, no formal obligation to keep the halacha, to keep the Torah, so then when they saw that it makes more sense to not keep a certain mitzvah, let's say in the case of Yaakov and marrying two sisters, so since there was no formal obligation, so they could make that decision. When something isn't formally obligated, if somebody is nohege chumra, so they might say, yeah, usually it makes sense to follow this particular stringency, but because it's not obligatory under certain circumstances, I'm going to be mako. And in a sense, keeping the Torah before Matan Torah for the Avos was a similar type of thing. But once there's an obligation, then we don't outsmart HaKadosh Baruch Hu. This relates to a broader topic. Maybe we could discuss it another time of Eir Lishma. For now, we'll leave that. But that's what the Nefesh HaChaim explains. And that's I think, what the Ran is saying over here. So again, Hayam min ha-Rawi, Shiyatam e'afal pishu hefech min ha-Emes, Shekein mechayev ha-Seichel ha-Enoshi. Because the Torah says for the Chamim to interpret the Torah using their intellect, using their minds, and using their minds, it seemed like it was Tameh. Rabbi Lazar gave the best arguments in the world, but they just didn't buy it. They didn't accept it. It seemed, from a logical perspective, he was wrong. So it would have been a violation of the Torah for them to have changed their vote based off of the miracles when they didn't see it. Vashar, afal pishomim emes, ein re'uyin lasos maisa kein bedarkei ha-Torah, kemo shelotiru bal machlokosol shel Belazar. Afal pishenit na lein baskol min ha-shamayim shehalacha kidvarav. There's a... Did I include it here? Akdama to the Ketzais? On the bottom. Oh, look at that. On the footnote. Okay. Yeah, so there's a very famous Akdama to the Ketzais HaChoshen where he expresses a very similar type of idea, if you want to take a look. Diadua desechel ha'adam yila lahasig ha'emes b'yos ba'aretz sharsho. B'lazeh amru, meaning in the famous episode where the Malachim were trying to convince Hashem not to give the Torah to Klal Yisrael. Ata mevazeh tachshit shelcha. Kevan shikar abriya avur ha-Torah, v'adam b'sichlo ha-enoshi mei hanimna lahasig ha'emes hamiti. In other words, what was the taina of the malachim? The taina of the malachim was that by giving the Torah to human beings who are fallible in their intellect, so you're going to, this is going to be a bezayon. Your Torah is going to be distorted. V'hainu, pia pascha b'chachma v'toras chesed al shon. Mishum, the Torah shebal peh nitna kefi achras hachachamim. Afal pi she'enu emes, v'nikra toras chesed. That's the meaning of toras chesed, as opposed to toras emes. A remarkable idea. Now, it's important, and I'm only saying this, I don't think anyone here would even have this Havamina, but it's worth noting because there are some people that misread this Ran. And they say that, you know, from this Ran you see that humans are supposed to come up with their, you know, the rules of halacha or morality on their own, even when they contradict what Hashem said or something like that. Obviously, that's not what the Ran means here. What the Ran is saying is that we as human beings were given the Torah, and we have to understand the Torah in the most honest possible way. And whatever the Torah says, that's what we do. And it's just that interpreting the Torah, we use our seichel and not nisim. Now, the Ran actually asks the question, so why don't you have to be concerned that you'll be harmed by following the Chachamim if, after all, their conclusions are hefech min ha'emes, right? As we said before, you know, the Ran takes for granted, he actually quotes, there are some who say that there is no ontological value to mitzvos. We don't accept their view. I'm not sure who he's referring to. The Rambam writes that there are reasons for every mitzvah, though sometimes the details of mitzvos don't have reasons. He quotes the Medrash that says that why did Hashem say to shecht from the front of the neck and not the back of the neck? That the purpose is to Wotzari Fisabrios, which the way the Rambam reads this Medrash, not like the Ramban, there's a famous Ramban about this on the mitzvah Shiluach HaKein, the way the Rambam understands that mitzvah, that Medrash is saying that sometimes details of mitzvos don't have reasons. They're meant Wotzari Fisabrios, which the Rambam understands means to instill obedience. So the Rambam says every mitzvah has a reason, but let's say when it comes to karbanos. So why is it that karban chatas is matan arba and an asha mishtaim shem arba? And why is that some karbanos are lamala, the sprinkling of the blood is on top, and some are at the bottom, and there's a difference in the shechita and the malika of different types of, for ofos of different types of, every, there's a million and one details. Sometimes the Rambam says there's not a reason for every detail. There are reasons for the mitzvos, and there's a need for details, but there's not always a reason for every detail. The Rambam's position is a reflection of his rationalistic perspective. The Sefer HaChinuch himself writes that from a rational perspective, it's impossible to give details for every mitzvah. If you did, it would just be a joke. You end up saying very shvacha things. The only way to explain the details of mitzvos is al pisod, the details of every mitzvah. In other words, you could explain the reason for every mitzvah even in a rational way. We could, as human beings, we're capable of understanding and coming up with the reasons for all mitzvos. We may or we may not succeed in doing so, but at least it's conceivably possible. But to understand the details, that's only possible using Kabbalah. Al pi Kabbalah, there are reasons, some which we know, some which we don't, but there are reasons for every single detail. The Rambam, not surprisingly, therefore concludes, and he understands as what Chazal are saying, is that there's no reasons for details. So the Sefer Chinuch, this Rosh Hashanah says, look, if you hold that there is not, the mitzvos of the Torah don't always, you know, an avera is not always harmful. So then you don't have a kasha. You don't have to be worried that the chachamim messed up. Because, okay, so it doesn't really hurt you in the first place. Again, maybe he's referring to the Rambam. I saw some people say he's referring to this Rambam. I'm not sure, because again, the Rambam does say there's reasons for every mitzvah. But he's saying such a position. So then you understand why you don't have to be worried about being harmed. But if you assume that there is, you know, as the Pasuk says, as the Ramban interprets at the beginning of Sefer Dvarim, that the mitzvos are given l'tov lach, for your benefit, right? And memeil, if you follow the Averos, it's l'ra lach, you're going to be harmed. Not just because there's a formal tzivoy, but because they're bad for you. So then why do you have to worry that the Chachamim made a mistake? So the Ramban addresses this question in two ways, but one way is he says that there's going to be hashkacha, that even though conceivably they can mess up, at least generally speaking, the Torah is on the one hand nimsar to the Chachmei Masorah, but at the same time, HaKadosh Baruch Hu ensures through hashkacha that they're not going to mess people up by following the Torah. So the possibility exists, right? There's a whole Maseches Horios. And there's a procedure, you know, even what to do if a Beis Din makes a terrible mistake and it's discovered subsequently how you deal with that. But generally speaking, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is mashgiach to make sure that they're okay. Last week we considered an interesting idea from the Rashba that maybe Hashem changes the reality to accord with the rulings of the Chachamim, which would thereby present them being harmed. The Sefer Chinuch addresses this question. He says, well, it's true that sometimes they might come up with a wrong answer and sometimes they'll be harmed by that, following that in theory. But if you didn't have a system of that allowed for deciding halachic questions, and even through humans, so then it would be anarchy. It would be, you know, Nasa Torah, we talked about the Shtei Toros, it would be a million Toros. So we need a system, and therefore, overall, following the halachic system, you'll be better off. Even if perhaps in a particular case you might not be. The Ran himself answers that, a little similar to the Chinuch, but with the Kenech, which is that the harm that will accrue as a result of following what the Chachamim tell you to do, even when it's wrong, will be less than the value, than the benefit you get from listening to the Chachamim. Mitzvah l'shma l'divrei Chachamim. In other words, you're always better off following the Chachamim, even if they get it wrong. Because just by following the Chachamim, that's something that's helpful. And that would be greater than the harm that might happen if you didn't. Anyhow, so again, according to the Ran, what this Gemara is telling us is that you should follow what the majority say, even when it's hefach min emes, and you can't follow the bas kol, even if it does reflect Hashem's voice and does reflect the truth, because that's not the way Hashem tells us to act. And let's see, elaborates here in the Drasha Chamishi, and let's read what he says. Some of the things we've seen, but I think it'll become clearer. V'zeh ha'inyan tzarch iyun. Eich ne'amar sheshnei kitos ha'machlokos ne'amru mipi ha'gvura. Right? What does it mean when we say elu ve'elu devel kim chayim, that both are mipi ha'gvura? Hinei Reb Lazar Reb Yeshua nechleku. V'achad hesig ha'emes v'sheni lo sigo. V'eich no'amar sheyatza mipi ha'gvura davar she'enu amiti. Right? How could it be that if one is right and one is wrong, right? They're incompatible. Can't be both Tameh and Tahor. So if you read Elu Ve'elu Divrei Elokim Chayim literally, it means that Hashem said something that wasn't true. How could that be? How could that be? Again, we're on the bottom left of... I skipped a little. We're now at the top right of page 2. Top right of page 2, where it's bolded. Aval Inyan Hu... HaKadosh Baruch Hu told Moshe at Sinai everything, even Mikveh Megillah, even mitzvos derabanan. Dikduke sofrim heim hamachlokos vechilukei asvaros shebein chachmei Yisrael. So what's meant in that Gemara when it says dikduke sofrim? What that means is the machloksin that we know, that we learn every day. V'kulon limda Moshe mipi Agvura. Moshe learned them all from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. U'maser bo klal asher bo yodeya ha'emes. And he told us, told Moshe a rule by which he could know the truth. V'hu achri rabim lahatos. V'chein lo sas ben adav asher yagidu l'cha. U'ksherabu ha'machlokos b'ein ha'chachamim im haya yachid etzal rabim hayu kov im halacha k'divei merubim. V'im rabim etzal rabim O yachid etzel yachid kifi aniver l'chachmei ador hahu. Shekvar nimso lahem ha'achra ke'amro uvas al ko'anim ha'leviyim ve'al ha'shofet asher yah b'yamim ahem v'darasht v'yigidu l'cha yistvar mishpat v'chulei lo tasur. Harei shenazan rishus l'chachmei ador s'lachriya b'machlokas ha'chachamim kifi aniver lahem v'afilu hem yu ha'kod min mehem gedola mehem v'rabim mehem. It's very important. Even though the later Beis Din is not as great as the earlier Beis Din, shekein etzdavinu l'achasachri yaskama ha'chachmei hadoros sheyaskimu la'ames o la'afcho v'zet mivuar v'harbe mekomos. Good. So that is what Hashem told us to do. With Moshe Feinstein, in his Hakdama to Igros Moshe, which I didn't include here, says a very similar idea. He says that there's two truths. There's the heavenly objective truth, and there's the halachic normative truth. And the Torah tells us to follow the halachic normative truth, even as we acknowledge that it might not always correspond with the heavenly objective truth. So we see here the Ran is referring to that same Yerushalmi, I think, that's the basis of the Ritva, but he's interpreting it, I think, a little bit differently. He's not saying that this means both views are equally true. Now, I want to consider with you, so we sort of considered two models so far. The first model is both views are equally true. The second model is what we just saw in the Ran, that both views are not equally true, but HaKadosh Baruch Hu told us that we should follow the view that is the majority, a sort of halachic autonomy. I'd like to consider a third model. It's good that Dr. Siegel's here to help us with this. This third model may be the same as the first model, though I'm presenting it as a third model because it's perhaps a little bit different. Another way of looking at Elu V'Elu. And to appreciate this, take a look at the Gemara in Gittin, which is the next source, middle of the right column on page 2. This is another place. The first source we saw on Elu V'Elu was the Gemara in Erevin. Now, it should be noted that these two models of Elu V'Elu might not be the same. Maybe there's a difference between Elu V'Elu in the Agadic context, which is what we're quoting here from Gittin, and Elu V'Elu in the Halachic context, which is the Gemara in Erevin. Though I'm going to suggest that that's not the case, that they really fundamentally do mean the same thing. So it's a very famous Gemara. Ksiv v'tiznei lav pilag sho. The Gemara here is talking about the tragic story of Pilegesh Begiva. The Pilegesh was her husband got very angry at her because she did something. The Gemara in Gittin is going to talk about what exactly it was that caused him to be angry, and she ran away. Agav, you see from here, as the Gemara points out, how terrible it is to ever get angry at your wife. This guy got angry at her, and tens of thousands of people were killed due to his anger, due to his temper. But anyway, he did get angry at her. She ran away. Later, she went back to her home, her family, her parents, and later he went to retrieve her, and whatever happened along the way that led to the terrible civil war and the catastrophic results So the Gemara is trying to figure out what exactly it was that caused him to get angry at her in the first place. So the pasuk says, "Vatizne lav pilaksho, Rabbi Yaviaser Omer, Zvuv Matzala, Rabbi Yonasan Amar Nima Matzala." Rabbi Yaviaser says it was a fly that he found. She gave him supper, and there was a fly in it or something. And Rabbi Yonasan says, "No, it was a hare." The Gemara considers what exactly the hare meant, what type of hare. Anyway, Vashkechei. Rabbi Yaviaser le'Eliyahu. So once Rabbi Yaviaser, who, as you know from other stories in the first parak of Gittin, was a rather colorful person, so he meets Eliyahu. Amar le'i, my ka'avir HaKadosh Baruch Hu. What's going on in the yeshiva Shalmala? Amar le'i, asik v'pilagash begiva. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is learning the sugya of pilagash begiva. My ka'amar, what's he saying? Amar le'i, Avyasar bini kachu omer. Yonasan bini kachu omer. It's a machlokas. Machlokas, what happened? Just like Rabbi Avyasar and Rabbi Yonasan were arguing in the yeshiva Shalmata what exactly happened, so too the same machlokas is being recorded in the yeshiva Shalmala. Amar lei, says Rabbi Avyasar to Eliyahu, chas v'shalom, umiyaka sveika klape shmai, how could that be? What, HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't know? How could you? Eliyahu, that's heretical. HaKadosh Baruch Hu surely knows what happened. How could you say that? Amar le, Eliyahu responded, Eil v'yelu devei lukim chayim, zvuv matza v'lo hikbid, nima matza v'hikbid. There's another answer there also. We'll focus on this first formulation. That initially he found a zvuv, and he was not makbid, and then he found a hare, and he was makbid. There's a debate. There are different interpretations of this, but one way that the Mefarshim explain this, take a look at the Maharsha. I think this is the easiest way to explain it, is what the Gemara means is very simple. You know, if I ask you what's the cause of World War I, so, you know, there are 35 people here, and you could give me 35 different answers. And they might all be correct. They're all various things caused it and triggered it and the like. You could focus on different types of events and the like. You know, if I ask you what caused the camel's back to break, so one person could say it was the 100-pound sack of flour, and another person could say it was that straw that was added. Depends what you mean by cause. Right? Obviously, the straw is not capable of breaking backs, but it was the straw that broke the camel's back, added to the 100-pound bag of flour that did it. So if you said it was the bag of flour that broke the camel's back, you'd be correct. If you said it was the straw, you'd also be correct. And that's exactly what happened here. What caused him to get angry at his pilagash? What happened was, he first saw the fly. He didn't blow up. He didn't like the fly. He was troubled by it, but he managed to stay quiet, gritted his teeth. He said nothing. And then came the hare, and he blew up. He couldn't take it anymore. And he yelled at her, and that was the rest is history. Right? So what caused him to get angry? The fly, or the straw? Well, it depends how you define cause. The final cause, the primary cause, which one? Rabbi Yasser and Rabbi Yonasan both had correctly identified an element of the cause of his anger. The truth is, neither had the whole picture. And therefore, Eilu v'eilu divrei lukim chayim, they're both correct. Now, what's, I think, so important here is the following. They were both right, as Eliyahu shows Rabbi Yaviaser. But Rabbi Yaviaser himself didn't think that was possible. When Eliyahu initially told Rabbi Yaviaser that Hashem was saying, Yaviaser bin Kahu Omer, Yonatan bin Kahu Omer, Rabbi Yaviaser says to Eliyahu, Chas v'shalom, umiyaka sveka klape shmai, that's impossible, right? There's either I'm right or he's right. Can't be both. These two possibilities are mutually incompatible. He didn't see the possibility that they could both be right. And therefore, as far as he was concerned, Eliyahu was saying something that was heretical. It was something that indicated HaKadosh Baruch Hu was mesupik. He didn't know what happened, which of course is wrong. And it's only after Eliyahu explained to Rabbi Avyasar that, in fact, in a way that he had not imagined previously, they're both correct, that Rabbi Avyasar was able to understand that, yes, actually, they're both correct. But that's not something he could, or at least it's not something that he did, come up with on his own. And perhaps this is a very important makor in terms of understanding the nature of Elu V'Elu. It is true that when we see a debate, we see two sides, and we don't see any possibility of reconciliation. We see them as mutually incompatible. But sometimes there's a detail, there's an idea that we're missing, which actually allows for both of the views to be true. And we just don't see it. And like in that case, even the protagonists in the debate saw that their two positions were mutually incompatible. But in reality, they were, in a way that they couldn't have imagined, or at least they didn't imagine. Tosfos in Rosh Hashanah, the next source you have over here, suggests a similar explanation to resolve the machlokas as to whether, when the world was created, was it created in Nisan or Tishrei? Mikiman matzilinan zehayom tchilas masecha. Kiman, Rebbe Elazar, the Gemara says that if we say on Rosh Hashanah zehayom tchilas masecha, we're taking for granted the view of Rebbe Elazar that Tishrei nivra haolam. Umay shiyasad Rebbe Elazar kalir begashem nishmini atzeres. Rebbe Elazar damar b'tishrei nivra haolam uvishal pesach yasad Rebbe Yoshua. So if you look at the liturgy, you find a very strange thing. On Pesach, you'll read about when you're saying Tefillas Tal that maybe the Nisan Nivra Ha'olam, and on Sukkot when you're reading Tefillas Geshem, you'll say that B'Tishrei Nivra Ha'olam. Right? It's a funny thing. Which one was it? Couldn't have been both. Either was created in Nisan or Tishrei. Omer Ben Utam De'el Ve'el Udiv Elokim Chaim Ve'ekel Meimar De'B'Tishrei Ela B'Machshava Levaros Velo Nivra Ad Nisan. And it gives other examples of this in Shas. Meaning to say what? That even though, at least until Rabbeinu Tam came along, we viewed these two possibilities as absolutely irreconcilable, can't be that the world was created in Nisan or in Tishrei, one or the other, right? In which case the tefillah is very shver, because we're splitting. And the answer is they're both true. And when we say nivra, we mean two different things. One is olam b'machshava, which for HaKadosh Baruch Hu perhaps is even more substantial than for us. And the second is the actual bria b'fa'al. And of course, though now's not the time, you have to figure out what that means. And why was there this gap between olam b'machshava and carrying it out? You know, with us, a lot of times there's a gap because we don't have the resources. I dream up this beautiful house I want to build, but if it's 4 years till I actually build it, because I'm human. For HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that's not the case. There's nothing preventing him. So it has some meaning. Now's not the time to figure it out. And obviously, that relates to the nature of Nisan versus the nature of Tishrei and the like. The point, though, is that here we have a machlokas that seems to be irreconcilable. But Elu V'Elu says that they're both true. And actually, Allah b'machshava is bria, at least klapei HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So if you say b'nisan nivra olam, that's emes. It's emes. It's divrei Elokim chayim. And that might be what it always means. Now, obviously, it's easier to understand how this could be when it comes to a non-halachic disagreement, like when the world was created, or what caused that man to be upset as his pilagesh. But the same might be true when it comes to halachic disagreements. And even though it's true that we can't see how, but the same might be true. And you can't figure it out. It's true from our perspective, which is limited. We don't see that possibility. I think a helpful analogy here, which I saw that Revolbi suggests in Ale Shor to understanding Elu V'Elu, is quantum physics and wave-particle duality. Meaning to say, and I don't understand this, and I think even people that do claim to understand it agree that it's highly unintuitive, but somehow or another, you know, is an electron a wave or a particle? Somehow or another, it's both. And depending on how you measure it, you'll get different results. And even though as far as we could tell, these two things are incompatible, can't be both, waves and particles are different, but it is both. What's the answer? I don't know. But they're both true. They're both true in a way that I can't figure out how they're both true, but that they still are. And one might add, by the way, that once we're talking about things we don't understand, the role of the observer in terms of quantum physics is also very relevant, and I think relevant here as well. This approach to Elu V'Elu, which we're suggesting, based off the Gemara in Gittin, Taisus and Rosh Hashanah, is, I think, expanded upon by Rav Kook. And you have that over here. It's what he calls the unification of opposites, where you have two positions that appear oppositional, but there is, in fact, a unity that could be realized with the discovery of a hidden condition. Rav Kook talks about this in a number of places. I gave you two. One is on the right column, bottom of page 2, in a letter. The second is in a different letter, in the footnote number 2 at the bottom of page 2. We'll read the first one. Keis munach lefanai mechtavo hacharon vitpalei she'alma shekasavti binyan achdut ha'hafachim meshiv kvodo elai. So I had this theory about achdut ha'afachim, the unity, the opposites, and you wrote back to me. This is a letter, by the way, he's responding to someone named Shmuel Alexandrov, who was born in 1865, and he was murdered by the Nazis, Yimach Shemo, probably in the year 1941. And he's an interesting fellow in his own right. He learned in Volozhin, but he was also somewhat of an enlightened thinker. And apparently, he had written to Rav Kook saying, I don't really understand your idea of the unity of opposites. He wrote something along the lines of, this is like imaginary, and there's no room for opposites, there's no room for unity, none of this makes any sense. So he says, Tmihani v'chi lezu anu tzrichim halo ikar hatzad shel chidosh shebidvarai hu ma shemitzad ha'machshava ha'elyona hasokeres es amkam shel dvarim ein b'mitziyus klal hafachim. The reality is that even though we perceive opposites when we look at the world, but there aren't opposites. It's an illusion. Because everything comes from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and klape HaKadosh Baruch Hu, there's absolute achdos. V'chol makom sheyesh hafachim, yesham bevadai eize tenai ne'alam. So there's some type of hidden condition. We perceive opposites because we don't grasp, we can't grasp the absolute unity of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And the truth is that when we look at the world, we perceive chilukim, we perceive divisions. The act of creation is an act of havdalah. Havdalah, being ma'abdil bin or l'choshech. When we look at the world, we see all sorts of havdalahs. Yisrael la'amim, yom ha'shvi'i l'sheish simei ha'maaseh. We see the hafachim. We see the contradictions. We see the plurality. We don't relate to HaKadosh Baruch Hu as he was Kodem Abriya, and he is now, though we can't see. We don't perceive the absolute unity. We can't relate to the Ein Sof. We perceive the Sphiros. We perceive contradiction. We perceive Midos. But we know, and we realize, and we appreciate, even though we can't always see how that's possible, that it all stems from absolute oneness. And though we perceive these contradictions, in reality we know that there's all one. There's that Tanai Ne'alam that we don't know. She Yisparesh Nimtza Sheshneh Mishpatim She'ne'u B'mivtau V'tziu Hafachim. When you understand that hidden condition, so you'll appreciate that these two sentences, these two laws, these two ideas that seem contradictory, she'chad mehem hu banui al atzad echad me'amishpat v'asheni al atzad acher. That is exactly what Eliyahu showed Rabbi Avyasar. That's what Rabbeinu Tam told us with respect to Brias Ha'olam. But with respect to the vast majority of machloksin, we don't see that. We don't see that. But it's there. V'nimsa shal yedei shnei hafachim yachdav anu ro'im es hamishpat mishnei tzadav. So the truth is that because we can't always perceive that hidden resolution, the way for us as humans to best understand the perspective is to see both sides of the equation, to see both views, to study Beis Hillel and to study Beis Shammai, to study Rabbi Lazar and to study the Rabbi Yoshua, and to appreciate that there might be some hidden condition here that we don't know, whereby it's all unified, it's all one. But we can't understand that, we can't grasp that. So what's the best way? How are we going to understand as much as we possibly can about the Inyan? By studying both perspectives. If we study both perspectives, the Metame and the Metaher, then we'll get as close as we can to understanding the whole topic. One day, maybe we'll discover or will be revealed to us that hidden condition. But until that point, if you just view one opinion, you just study the opinion of the Chachamim, you miss out in Rebbe Lazar, you'll be missing something. You'll have a more narrow, limited understanding of the topic. Umitzidam en kan nosei achad, kan kevan sheyechusim shel hanosei heim shonim. Uvinyan shanu asukim dehainu ma shenogeya lematzav hadeos mispashet zeh mishpat al kol harayonos haruchaniim. V'nigud amiti lo nimtza ki im bameh shenogeya la'avodos ha'historios shehinan mivunos v'yidiyasenu al yidei ha'kabal v'amesores. Shegam hein kol ma shehadeos haruchanios me'iros yoser nasos harishonos yoser mizukakim v'yoser krovos al alev. Ad shemegi adam gam bahen l'midas ha'madreg ha'alyona shebetmimos. Echad ha'achar ha'archava yoser bilti mugbelet shel chofesh ha'machshava v'dafka al yada. Very fascinating last point over here. So saying regarding whatever topic we're talking about, this difference of opinions, so true opposition only exists with respect to the historical facts. And here too, the degree of spiritual thought is enlightening. And the more you study it, the more you find you'll be the more you'll get to this level of tamimus, of simplicity, whereby you'll be able to see the multiple possibilities. So what's he saying? He's saying that, you know, from HaKadosh Baruch Hu's perspective, from his elevated perspective, mitzad ha-machshava ha-elyona, there's absolute unity. And that's a truer, deeper perspective, what he's calling amkam shel dvarim. And from that perspective, there are no contradictions. And our limited perspective, we see contradictions. And as such, the proper mahalich is to look at all views. Rav Dessler, in the next source, makes a similar point. Kishachazal omem deo shonos, at least binyanei agada, hare kulan mi'iros oso nose mi'etstadim shonim. In other words, the different views in the machlokas are just different vantage points. He quotes a Zohar to this effect. It's not really shayach machlokas. Again, he's distinguishing between agada and halacha, but maybe even within halacha it's possible. And this, by the way, gives us a whole new perspective on debate. You know, I think a lot of times we sort of think machlokas is very negative. And it is in a certain sense. Obviously, there's a mila for everything to be straightforward. But it's precisely because we're limited that the machlokas allows us to achieve a much greater degree of shlemus. That's the beauty. The Aruch HaShulchan in his Hakdama, which you have over here, compares this to an orchestra and the different sounds in the orchestra that all combine together to make beautiful music. When you just hear one sound or the other, it's incomplete. And that's why, obviously, we do spend so much time studying machlokas. And though, again, sometimes we have to figure out practically what to do and figure out the halach l'maisa. But our focus in learning is really even understanding the machlokas. And that gives us the best shot at having a correct interpretation. There's another famous vart from Rav Kook on the Siddur where he writes about Talmidei Chachamim Marbim Shalom Ba'olam. So, you know, Marbim Shalom, like Talmid Chachamim, there's nobody that argues more than Talmid Chachamim. There's a machlokes about everything, it seems. But the pshat is that it's Shalom, it's from Shlemos. The best, the most complete view that we could get is from studying and considering all the perspectives. Yeah, you had a question.
Yeah. It seems like the way that Rebbe's presenting that Elio told them you're both right.
Mm-hmm.
It seems like the Pashup Shad is he's saying you're both wrong. They both understood this is the only thing that happened. It's like when you're in a debate, it's like you're speaking to each other,
mm-hmm.
like or they're missing. It sounds like when Ramban comments on Rashi, he often says like ain't no nach. Maybe Rashi is different. Like says you're wrong and like
sure.
But what we're doing, even like the Mar Hashanah, like they were speaking to each other about one thing. We're saying we're just saying every machlokas they're misunderstanding the other person.
So I think what Rav Kook is saying is I don't know if you'd say it's wrong as much as it is incomplete. It is incomplete. And Rabbi Aviasar and Rabbi Yonasan were both right, but their perspectives were incomplete. So this means two things for us. Number one is, until that hidden condition is revealed, so the best we could do is the views. That'll give us the most complete perspective that we could gain, and also to believe that there is some type of resolution that we don't know. But you're correct. In other words, we are limited. We're limited by our minds and by our perception and the like. And that's exactly what Rav Kook is saying, that everything comes from absolute oneness. But we don't relate to that absolute oneness. We see pirud, we see chiluk, we see havdalah. And as such, so we try to understand things from the best of our perspective, from the best of our ability. And as each person has their ability to understand, because of who they are, a certain perspective, but their perspective is limited. Each of us has a chelek in Torah. Each of us has an ability to understand a certain thing. And that's what machlokas is. The way a number of the Svarim talk about machloksin is that each of the Bali Plugta, due to their Shorish HaNeshama, is more likely to see, to appreciate, to perceive a different element of that truth. And it's incomplete. It's true. And what we could do is, when we study both views, we have a more complete perspective than if we just studied one. And if we limit, you know, each of us and each of the positions in the machlokas is going to reveal something else due to who they are, that the other one, that the other view doesn't necessarily perceive. You know, the way, I didn't put it here, but the way that, if you look at, you know, looking at machlokas, there's a fascinating psikta de Rav Kahana. So the psikta de Rav Kahana is depicting a Maimed Har Sinai. I don't think I put it here. I'll check if it's later. Anyhow, oh, maybe it is. Yeah, I did put that. Okay. If you look at page 4, so there's a couple of interesting things relating to this. Maybe we'll read it in a second. But first, the Psikta of Kana. So, Anoch Hashem Elokecha, Amr Blevi, Nivra Lama Kadosh Baruch Hu Ki Ikunin Hazu, Shiyesh Lapanim Mikol Makom, Aleph Bnei Adam Mebitin Ba, Vihi Mevates Bekulam. Kach Kadosh Baruch Hu, Kshay Medabir Mkol Echad Ve'achad Mi'Yisrael, Haya Omer, Imi hadavar medaber, Anochi Hashem Elokecha, Ein Ksiv Kan. Sorry, Anochi Hashem Elokechem Ein Ksiv Kan, El Anochi Hashem Elokecha. So, Kadosh Baruch Hu was speaking to everyone individually, and everybody felt that way, and everybody saw it from a different vantage point. Amar Reb Yosi, Reb Chanina, Lefi Kochan Shel Kol Echad VeEchad, Haya Hadibur Medaber Imo. I don't know exactly what this mashal is. It's some type of statue or face or like stone with many sides to it, right? So if you have, you know, a precious stone with many facets, so everybody looks at it and they see something a little bit different depending on where you're standing. So Torah is the same way. Maimed Har Sinai is the same way. Nobody can understand everything because Torah reflects HaKadosh Baruch Hu's infinite wisdom. But everybody from where they're standing at the Maimed Har Sinai, where they're standing in the mountain or who they are or what they are, saw something a little different. And just like the Mun, it was one Mun. It's not like... the Mun was different for everybody. It was the same Mun, but everybody tasted in it something a little different. Kafi Kohan. So, you know, maybe it means like the little kids tasted like candy and then you grew up and, I don't know, tasted like meat and then the taste got more sophisticated, but it's not. The pshat is that, you know, the Mun was this type of spiritual food, and depending on your kohos, your spiritual kohos, you could see in it, detect in it more. And the way that manifested itself is that it tasted different for everybody. But it was the same thing. So Torah relates to everybody in different ways. The Marshal talks about this a little bit in the source that you have over here on page 4. And that's, the Marshal explains, that's the pshat in Machlokas. If you take a look, did I put it here? I don't think I put it here. But the Maral explains that's what's going on. This is in Baragola, Parakei. Saying when you have a machlokas, so let's say one opinion says it's tamei. So sha'afim adavar tamei yafsher shelo yia lo tzad bechina el tahara shalma. V'cheinim adavar tahor yafsher shelo yia lo bechina mizeh ma shel tuma. V'nei adam mechulakim b'seichel, v'yevsher shiyu kol seichel b'nei adam al derech echad, kamo shizbar. V'lachin kol echad ve'achad mekabel b'china achas kefi chiluk sichlam. So everybody is different, and they look at things differently. And therefore they come to different conclusions. And you're right. In a sense, they're wrong. Everybody's wrong. Everybody's limited. But also everybody's right. Everybody perceives a different element of truth. And when we all get together, so then we have a better understanding. There's a very beautiful piece from Rav Kook. It's in Pachad Yitzchak on Chanukah, Maimer Gimel, where he talks about, you know, the mile of the forgetting of Torah. Because, you know, obviously there's a chisaron in forgetting of Torah, but there's a mile as well in that, in recreating the Torah that's been forgotten. So each of us comes to our own understanding of it based off of who we are, and through that, and through the machloksin, when we appreciate that, even though they're Balei Asufos, but Kulam Nitnu Miroa Echad, so we have a much more complete and better understanding of the big picture. There's a very beautiful idea that the Rav develops in Halachic Mind. I give you a couple quotes from this point, which he calls epistemological pluralism. And he maintains, we talked about this a little bit in the first semester, but this is how he deals with, you know, seeming contradictions between Torah and science, but all types of contradictions. It's the recognition, and again, you know, the discoveries of quantum physics are things that help us really have a better understanding of this idea, though it's still very unintuitive, which is the idea that that there could be multiple perspectives on something that, as far as we could tell, are irreconcilable, but really are both true in a way that we don't always perceive, and we can't always perceive. But we recognize our limitations and our inability to understand everything, and once we appreciate that, then we can value machlokas. And this doesn't mean that, you know, if you take this too far, so that every machlokas, you can say, well, what's the point of the machlokas? I'm right, he's right, nobody's right. You know, what's the point of debating? That's not the way we're supposed to learn. We're supposed to, like we started off at the beginning, to use our human intellect to understand the Torah to the best of our ability. HaKadosh Baruch Hu made us limited and told us that you have to figure out as much as you possibly can based off of who you are and based off of your abilities. But at the same time, to realize that sometimes when we do have a machlokas with someone, not to say that we should not believe in our own view, but to also at the same time appreciate that it could be, certainly if it's a machlokas l'shem shemayim, that the other position is saying something that's emes. And though I don't see how they could be right and I could be right at the same time, I also can appreciate that that's possible. And obviously a person who recognizes this, there'll be a degree of respect in their discourse and in their disagreement. When you have that appropriate humility, even if at the same time you have the appropriate confidence in our ability to understand the Torah. And that really gets us back to Elu V'Elu that we started with, and it's Chun Ivanai. Okay, so we'll stop over here. And Be'ezras Hashem, next week we'll have a new sugya, a new topic.